Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
I am joined now by writer Anna Carey, whose new book, Our Song, which is her first novel for adults, explores the will-they-won't-they relationship between Tadhg and Laura, who are ex-bandmates from their college days and would-be lovers. Tadhg is now a star. Laura is not. And when he calls on her to help write some song again, it kind of turns her world upside down. Anna, you're very, very welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, your first book for grown-ups. How's that?
It's very different from the experience of publishing for children, but in a good way.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is that to some extent you are writing from your own personal experience because You were the cool girl. You were in a number of bands when you were growing up.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but yeah. I was in bands from my first band when I was 15. We busked on Grafton Street, which Tadhg does in the book as a teenager as well. And then I was in a couple of bands in college. And then after college, I was in a band called El Diablo. And I did get together with my bandmate and we've been married since 2008.
Of course, the writer Patrick and we'll get to that. Can you remember what it was like busking on Grafton Street? It's a pretty good thing to kind of have in your CV.
It is, but it's also slightly terrifying. There's a bit in the book where Tadhg says that once you've done it, you never have stage fright again because it feels so wrong to just start singing. It feels as wrong to when you're busking to start singing in the street as it would to any of you walking down the street. It goes against all your social conditioning, but once you've done it, nothing can scare you.
It takes a certain kind of courage, and looking back there can't have been too many girls on the scene back then, you know, because when you look back to those times that this book draws on, my memory of it was all about the male lead.
Yeah, I mean, when I was
or in a the, lot of it.
Yeah, when I was in the band in the early noughties, which is around the time that the college parts of this book are set, when I was always playing the most gigs, there were definitely women in bands, but it was still predominantly male, and I was always in all the bands I was in, I was always the only girl. And it was really important to me in this book that Laura is not the only girl in the band. You know, the bands that she's in are mixed gender and kind of 50-50, and also, unlike me, she's not the singer. She is a guitarist, and she is a musician as well as a songwriter.
Did you feel like a little bit of an anomaly back then? Were you challenged by, I guess by men or women on kind of, getting up and doing that and being the gutsy lead?
Not so much, but I think definitely in things like guitar shops and stuff. I can play the guitar, but I never was a guitarist in a band. And guitar shops back then were not hugely welcoming to girls and women. And there was a kind of oh, you've got to prove yourself. And that's, there's a great Haim song about that, where she sings about, being given a starter guitar in a guitar shop, even though she's a professional, incredible musician. And I think that's hopefully changing, but it was definitely a thing back then. So that's why it was even more important for me to make Laura in the book a guitarist.
And this is, it is a love story about being a band. And I guess maybe because the experience of being in a band is so intimate in a way and it's so intense that these relationships are inevitable. What is it about that kind of the people in a band falling in love that is so fascinating and sort of endurably so?
Well, I guess, and there's the Fleetwood Mac kind of element where it leads to enormous drama, which definitely can happen. But I'm never surprised when it happens. I don't think it's, I don't think it's inevitable that everybody who's in a band together, if, their gender preferences align, will end up hooking up. But I'm never surprised when it does, because, as you say, it is a very intense dynamic, and you spend a lot of time in small rooms together, looking at each other very intently. So it is quite intimate in that way. And I guess if there is any spark there, it's not that surprising that, you know, something will happen.
It's a novel and it's not autobiographical.
No.
But as you did say, you did meet your now husband, the journalist Patrick O'Friain. So you're a success story.
We are, yeah. But we were friends. We met in college and we weren't in a band together. We were just friends and like we both, you know, went
Did you go see each other playing each
we
other's
did.
Bands?
We
you
played
did?
A gig
okay.
together. So
oh,
there's,
well.
We played a few, good few gigs together actually. We have a poster up in our house, which I did put in the book with a slight variation for the gig that I played in 1996, and Patrick's band were the headliner and we were the first on the bill, the band I was in college at the time. And my band didn't have a name at the time because we hadn't been playing together for that long, and my friend Dara was fed up with us waiting for us to try and come up with a name, so he just wrote on the poster "The band Anna's in." And that poster is on the wall of my house to this day.
What's interesting, because as life imitates art, but you know, obviously you're in a romantic relationship with Patrick, but you've also had this creative relationship with each other down through the years. You've been able to continue working together.
Yeah, and we still, you know, we still play songs together for, you know, just for fun, and we still write stuff together for fun. And actually there's two songs in the book that play a key role in the book, and one of them, and I wrote actual songs for them and recorded them, and they're on the audiobook. And they will be streaming elsewhere eventually, but I felt I really had to write them as songs to write about people writing them, if you know what I mean. But one of them I wrote entirely by myself, and the other was a co-write with Patrick, and he sings it on the recording. So yeah, the creative collaboration continues, even connected with the book.
Do you think there is a certain kind of a personality or a character you have to be if you're in a band, especially like, you know, if you're the lead singer? Because it's all about trying to make it, and so many bands don't.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, like, is it a drive that you need, or a...
Maybe. Like, I don't think I ever wanted to. I was always more, I think, focused on writing than being in the band. So for me, you know, Laura in the book, it is her, it's her dream that she didn't follow. And
Tig, he does. And he
does
becomes
follow.
The
yeah.
ultimate superstar.
Exactly. So that's sort of just been gnawing at her. And it wasn't, so, you know, in our song, that is the story of somebody who sort of manages to find their way back to what, you know, they really should be doing, and find their way back to the person that they are clearly meant to be with. But in real life, I don't think I did want to be a full-time musician ever. So, you know, it's definitely not autobiographical in that sense. I didn't have that drive, whatever it is.
What's brilliant is that you had a brilliant resource, because you say it's the noughties, the early 2000s, and you were you actually went back to your own letters and diaries from that time.
I did.
First of all, amazing to have had access to those resources. What was that experience going back and kind of looking at life through the eyes of your younger self?
It was very intense. So the characters are a bit younger than me. So they're in college around sort of 2000, you know, early noughties. And I was in college in the mid 90s. So I was looking back at the diaries from when I was the same age as them. And I thought it would be funny. And it was funny sometimes. And especially the letters, like one of my best friends found all the letters that I'd sent to her. And like I found the ones she'd sent to me. And we were taking photos of them and sending them to each other on WhatsApp. But then sometimes it was really intense in a way that I didn't expect it to be. It was kind of like, because I only ever wrote my diary when I was full of angst.
Yes.
So I sometimes would find myself feeling, you know, angry about stuff that I had totally forgotten, like things I had not thought about in 30 years, basically.
And do you think those kind of things, you know, letters and diaries or journals, you know, do you think they're obviously a very tangible record
yes.
of that time? Are they very, very reliable?
It's interesting. I think they probably are more than our memories. So one of the things that was really striking when I was reading it, because I was, you know, I was doing it because I really wanted to channel that feeling of being, you are an adult, but you're just, you know, you're still quite messy. So I wanted to channel that for Laura, and I don't think I would have been able to if I hadn't read
and
my
how
diaries.
Did you feel about your younger self, kind of, you know, the older version, going back and looking at her, whatever her fears,
yeah.
her anxieties?
I felt weirdly protective of my younger self, but it also very much felt like me in a way that I think if I was reading my diaries when I was 15, it wouldn't have. It would have been, you know, look at that child. Whereas this was like a messier, messier, younger version of myself. And yeah, I mean, sometimes it was like the fact that there was genuinely stuff that I had completely forgotten. And that that I think if I had, you know, thought about more, I could have framed certain events in a different way. And I think that was kind of a weird experience.
Do you still keep diaries?
Not really. I do have like one of those line a day diaries. You know, you can get like the 5 year ones, and there's like a page for every date and a space for every year, and which is actually quite useful because you do have a little record of like, oh, that is what I was doing. Because you know, the older you get, the more the months sort of blend together.
I know, they go far too quickly. A lot of the book is really, really quite nostalgic, forming a band back in college days. Do you think it's more difficult now, you know, particularly for whether it's music or any other, you know, people who are trying to create a life as in a band or or as artists? And I see the basic income for the arts, the pilot scheme is going to come up for evaluation again. Do you think it was easier then?
100%. There were more. I mean, I think it's so expensive to live in Ireland these days, in a way it certainly wasn't when I was in my 20s and when I was in college.
Did it feel possible that you could eke out a career in a band?
Maybe not a career, because very few people were doing that, but you could, you know. I had friends who were on the dole who were like playing in bands, and they could afford to live away from home and pay rent, like pay rent on absolute kips, but like they could, you know, you could,
afford
have
to live
a life
in the city.
As an independent young adult. And you could, there were more small venues, you know, and that was cheap, and there were rehearsal spaces and they were cheap. So, you know, in that way, there was just more infrastructure if you didn't have much money back then. And I think it's a huge shame and will have long-term consequences that younger people don't have the space and opportunity to make art in the same way.
Like, I know sometimes looking back through the lens of nostalgia can be an unreliable one, but it was a very different time back then.
Yeah, it was. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I really wanted to have the dual timeline in the book, so you can see it's striking the difference between the characters' lives and sort of the Dublin that they're in. Because the main part of the book is set in 2019, but it sort of moves between the two eras. And obviously their lives are different, but, you know, I do think that Dublin, where the book is set, is also very different.
And is it about class as well? You know, like, there's nothing didactic. It's a novel that races along, but there, you know, that element of who now gets to create art, or who gets to become the superstars.
Yeah, well, the characters are pretty middle class in it, so you know, they're from Northside, suburban Clontarf and Drumcondra. So, you know, they do definitely have the class privilege that allows them to, you know, go to college and not have to work when they're in college. So that's definitely, I think that's always been the case as well, that, you know, they're not people who have to struggle to, you know, access university and had time to just hang around in college when they were there. So I think class always affects everything, but, you know, then and now.
So due to this, I don't want to give too much away. An email comes in out of the blue asking her to go for a lunch. But I suppose what it's about is this woman in her 30s who had that dream, and she's now rediscovering her passion for music. Was that an important theme for you to explore?
Yeah, no, it really was. It was the idea that, you know, it's never too late, which I think is just very appealing to everybody. And the idea that she was just good at this and she loved it, and it just made her feel in a way that nothing else really has. And she just,
that could have been her in other circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. And I just loved writing about, you know, it's about her falling back in love with Tadhg, but it's also about her falling back in love with playing music. And that was very important
too. Is it about confidence? You know, because sometimes when you see a lot of girls and adolescents in their late teens give up sports, for example, you know, and then a lot of us give up our hobbies, those creative things that really, you know, kept us going when we were younger in our late teens. So is there something about that, or why do you think that is? Is it a societal sort of expectation to go into adult things?
Yeah, I think so. And it's kind of, I think sometimes, you know, creative things for their own sake are kind of trivialized. I mean, I do love playing music and singing for fun now, and probably sing more than I did when I was, you know, in a band, to be honest, like, and go to like singing sessions and playing music with friends and stuff like that. And that's a joy in itself. And I think we are, you know, we're not really encouraged to do those things just for the love of it, basically. And I really feel that everybody has some creative outlet that will, whatever it is, that can bring them.
So is there a little bit of you in Laura? Because this is something that this, writing this book and writing for adults is something that you've been wanting to do for a time.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm really proud of my kids' books, and my children's publisher, O'Brien, were absolutely amazing. But when I started writing Our Song last year, I just felt, oh, this is what I should be doing right now. Like, I loved writing it so much. There's a bit when Laura says that playing music again is like letting sunlight into a room that she didn't know was dark. And that is what it felt like when I was writing the book. It was just the first draft anyway, but it was just such a...
Had it been bubbling away in your mind for a time?
Not really. Like, I knew I wanted to write a romantic comedy because I love good romantic comedies, and I read.
And they get a lot of bad press, don't they? Rom-coms.
They do, but at their best, they're incredibly satisfying and really, you know, emotionally rich, I hope. And when I was writing it, I just...
Because I have to say, I was a little bit surprised when I saw that was the genre. I was going, I didn't put Anna Carey down now for a rom-com writer.
Well, it turns out that is what I want to do.
Turns out she is a hopeless romantic. There is a thread in the novel, and again, don't want to give too much away, but about struggling with fertility. Mm. And that is something that you had experienced yourself.
Yeah, it was really, this was always going to be part of the book, actually, that this was going to be an element in it, because I did want to have children and then I couldn't. And I'm pretty okay about it now, but I really felt that a lot of the narratives that we're presented with around infertility were either, you know, we're women who never wanted to and were completely happy, you know, with that decision, or women who did want to and they couldn't. And
you're either pitied or feared.
Exactly. That is exactly it. So you're either like, this was a huge tragedy and I have never got over it, or I never wanted to and I'm, you know, and don't have a mothering bone in my body. And obviously that is true for some people, for a lot of people. But I think there's a lot of us that are in the middle who are I wanted to, I thought it would happen. It didn't happen. It was a source of enormous sadness. Mm-hmm. And now I'm actually fine. Like, I think that, you know, there's a lot of us who are in that space in the middle where, you know, you don't get what you expect and you grieve it, but you do get through it. And it was really, really important for me to write a book that has a happy ending that doesn't involve a baby.
And it's interesting because it's on one level, it's such a private thing, but it's something that's very, very public because there is this relentless pressure on couples, but particularly on women to bear children. And look, I mean, there are many, many people who are in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, struggling with infertility, maybe didn't find, you know, the right partner. I think it's, you know, more than one in six couples now that experience infertility. Does that make it harder or easier for you to speak out, or was it something that you thought, no, I want to explore this?
I want to explore this. I mean, I was very conscious that of the need to see myself, you know, to see my situation presented somewhere. Like literally the only example that I could think of, and I have thought about this a lot, of stories, like fictional stories, where somebody, where a couple, you know, experience infertility and are happy afterwards, is the Pixar film Up. So everybody remembers the devastating opening sequence where you see just a wordless montage of this couple and you see they're trying for a baby and then something happens and, you know, there is no baby. And it is devastating. It is like everybody cries at it. But I think people forget that at the end, because I actually feel emotional talking about it. I can't even think about it without getting quite tearful. You see a scrapbook of their life together afterwards. You don't see it till quite late. And you realise that the rest of their life was amazing, just the two of them. And that the fact that there is one film, God, I actually am crying talking about it now, but the fact that that's one film that I could think of all the narratives in the world. Like, I'm sure there are more, and I hope there are more, and if anybody knows of any more, please tell me. But it's so rare that you see that, and I think it's really important to be seen and, you know, not be told, you know, don't worry, there's going to be she's going to be pregnant at the end, or they've magically adopted a baby out of nowhere. And because the implication of that is, well, if you don't get that, then you are a failure, and you have failed, and your life is the unhappy ending. And that is, I've that's the one thing that now I find quite triggering, for want of a better word, is those sort of things. Like, I'm pretty fine with my life, but what makes me feel sad is being told that, like, well, don't worry, the characters aren't going to end up like you. And so it was really important for me to put that in the book, and for it to be very explicit in the book that there is not going to be, you know, a magical miracle baby at the last minute.
And to open up a different conversation, your husband Patrick wrote a very, very moving chapter in his own book, Okay, Let's Do Your Stupid Idea, about not having children. How did you feel? Like, one, it was so interesting to hear a man speak about that experience. How did you feel when he was writing about your story, you, for both of you, in a way?
I mean, he obviously did ask for permission before he did it, and I did read it before it was...
How did you feel when you first read it?
I thought it was really beautiful, and it's called Something Else, that essay, and that does come from a thing that Elizabeth Gilbert, the writer, said when I saw her being interviewed, and I've interviewed her myself and talked about this, where she talked about being with a group of friends of women of all different situations, some had kids, some didn't, some had careers they loved, some didn't, but nobody there had got everything they wanted, and everybody had got something else. And that's what gave Patrick the title of the essay. He's had more feedback about that essay than I think everything else in the book, because I think people did feel it was important to see a man talking about it. And weirdly, I think him having written about it and talked about it publicly made it easier for me, because it was out there. Like, I wasn't going to have to, you know, it was on the public record that we wanted to have kids and we couldn't have kids. And that was the... that made it easier for me to write about it and not be scared people would, like, oh, maybe they'll think this is, you know, based on your own experiences. Well, you know, obviously to some extent it is. Not in the circumstances in the book are very different, but...
I was just wondering when I'd read the book, is this going to join that kind of that new lexicon or genre of where we're hearing? There seems to be a thirst of hearing about, you know, women's stories in their 40s, you know, and it doesn't all work out perfect.
Yeah.
You know, everybody doesn't get what they want. Yeah. They might be getting something else. But when you look at the popularity of books by Miranda July, Curtis Sittenfield, that kind of writing about it, do you think that these stories, and perhaps these stories of a less than perfect lives, are having a bit of a cultural moment?
I hope so. Like, I mean, the characters in my book, as I said, are younger than me, and they're in their like they're 37 in the modern day narrative.
But it will chime with stories, a lot of, you know, because a lot of women by their late 30s, early 40s, are not, you know, by default or design, going to be having children. Yeah. So it speaks to a broader, I suppose, group of people.
Yeah, and it's also, it's an age when you start having to sort of, take stock, I suppose, of, you know, are you happy with how things are going? Like, can you change things? And I think it's really interesting, like, when you mentioned people like Curtis Sittenfeld and Miranda July, who are about my age, that there is this appetite for stories of women in their 40s and, you know, and heading beyond, that is messier and isn't necessarily the traditional script, which I think is
because things don't always resolve in a major key. You know, sometimes it is.
So that's the thing. You don't know what's you know, people's lives aren't as laid out for them as maybe they would have been in the past, and I do think that's a really good thing.
Zadie Smith was recently saying she was no fan of growing old. What did you think of that? And kind of, especially someone of her kind of stature articulating that.
And she's exactly the same age as me. I think she's like 2 weeks younger or something like that. I could relate to it because I think it's, I sometimes find the whole thing like, I love growing older. I was like, no. Do you? My knees don't. And all the collagen leaving my body is not great. Yeah, I'm not, I think it's obviously a lot better than the alternative, but yeah, it is rough and it is weird. And realizing that, like, wow, there's, you know, the potential is narrowing to an extent in a way that, you know, when you're 25, everything's ahead of you. And when you're 20 plus years older than that, everything simply isn't ahead of you. But I guess the good thing is that lots of good things are ahead of you. So maybe not as many as when you were 20. But
you obviously moved, not moved away, because I'm sure you could go into, but this book marks a sort of a definitive shift for us thinking of you as Anna Carey and writing, you know, kind of in the young adult world, but going on to write now for adults. Do you think that that is sort of a natural transition in your evolution as a writer? Look, I mean, is there anything else bubbling away in the background?
Who knows? But like, I don't know if it was inevitable, but it definitely felt like the right time for me. And my last few young adult books were historical, and that was very, like, a lot of intense research as well, which I think I was getting a bit burnt out by the end. But I think there's, you know, I read very widely in a lot of genres. I have an unfinished historical vampire novel that might see the light of day one day. Not the immediate future, but the
book. And no rom-com in that, no.
No, but the next book, the one that I'm writing right now, which will hopefully, if all going well, will be out next year, is also a romantic comedy. And it's about Laura's younger sister, Annie, who appears in Our Song. So I'm really enjoying writing that, so I definitely feel this is what I want to keep doing, and I just feel very lucky that Hachette enabled me to do so.
And Anna Carey is really resonating with people. One of our listeners is saying, Anna is amazing, I will definitely be getting the book. And another says, thank you, Anna, for articulating the experience of so many of us remain silent about this. It's a really, really powerful interview, and your words are full of the underlying emotions. And
I'm going to cry again now.
That is perfectly okay. Well, I'm afraid, Anna Carey, it's been congratulations on your new book. It's Our Song, and it's published by Hachette.
It is.
It is indeed, and it is out now. But Anna Carey, thank you for joining us. Best of luck with the launch, and we'll take a quick break.
Thank you.
Email brendan@rte.ie.